tribute to Asian Pacific American Heritage Month with stories of our challenges and triumphs on the next Fox 11 News In Depth. May is Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. It's a chance to pay tribute to the generations Asian and Pacific Islanders who have helped enrich America. And this year, above all others, it holds a very special and important meaning as we've witnessed a dramatic rise in anti-Asian hate. You're watching a special edition of Fox 11 News In Depth. I'm Susan Hirasuna, and thank you so much for joining us. Our first guest represents two facets of the Asian American experience, the struggle to adjust as an immigrant in a new country, then striving to excel and, frankly, give back. Army Major General Viet Long is the first U.S. military general born in Vietnam, and I think you'll find his story remarkable. And should I call you Viet or General? General?
Yeah, just please call me Viet.
All right, so tell me a little bit about your journey from Vietnam to the U.S.
Yeah, so I was born in Vietnam, and I lived in Saigon until the age of 9. And in April 1975, the day before the fall of Saigon, my family was essentially trapped at Sun Sen Yat Airport in Saigon there, awaiting what I would consider a pretty bad fate and set of outcomes. And fortuitously, we were rescued by Marine helicopters and ended up on the USS carrier Hancock. And after several days at sea, we ended up in a refugee camp in Guam, followed by another refugee camp at Fort Chaffee, Arkansas, and finally made our way to Los Angeles, California, where we settled.
Well, tell me about that moment on the USS Hancock, where that sort of determined your fate for the rest of your life.
Yeah, it was, I remember it very clearly, and it still touches my soul to this day. You know, as I was telling you earlier, we thought we were doing, we were trapped at Sun Sen Yat Air Base and surrounded by enemy forces. We were taking a mortar and artillery fire. And when we were rescued by U.S. Marines, and as soon as we landed on the USS Hancock, I just didn't know what was happening. I thought we were on some island off the coast of Vietnam, and a lot of people were confused. And I remember tucking on my dad's shirt and asking him where we were. And he calmly said, you know, hey, you're embarked on the carrier USS Hancock. And I said, what does that mean? And he says, it means that no one in the world can harm you now.
And it also inspired you to do what you eventually did, correct?
I have. You know, just my observations of how we were treated and my interactions with the sailors aboard there has played a pretty major part in me serving here today.
So as an immigrant to this country and as an Asian male, deciding to go into the military. Now, I have heard that the military is a more level playing field than in corporate America. Surely, though, you must have had some challenges along the way. Can you tell us?
Yes, sure. You know, I think similar to coming to America, you know, I came into a field. I was an infantry officer. I came into the combat arms. You know, we had very few minorities back then, especially in the officer ranks. And I always felt that in addition to being able to assimilate, to integrate, I always had to perform a notch higher just to be able to attain some of the same goals that my colleagues were able to attain.
So you would agree that it is a more level playing field than for regular people in corporate America?
I would say, you know, the military is a great organization. You know, we, you know, our integration goes back way into the 50s. And although we have our challenges, I think it's still a fairly great meritocracy, whereby if you perform, there are opportunities for you to continue to excel and to be able to achieve, you know, the highest ranks in the Army. But there are challenges that are associated with that as well.
Yeah, I was hoping that you can elaborate on that. As an Asian male, did you ever have any problems with having your subordinates listen to you as a commander?
I never have, and thank goodness for that. But I started out, in a unit that didn't have a lot of diversity. So how do I overcome that? I overcame that through hard work, through competence, to achieving the highest standards I can as an officer. I share the same danger and always left the front. I think by doing that, you just automatically were able to earn a lot of respect and be able to be part of the team.
But do you appreciate the fact that you have broken a lot of stereotypes, or is that something you're just not as aware of because you've been in the military all this time?
Yeah, I am very aware. I think I have broken a lot of stereotypes because, people have natural biases, and I think there are certain perceptions of Asians. A person of my stature, physically smaller, maybe can be perceived as more timid and less aggressive. And I think, really fully realizing the situation that you're in, you have to kind of work hard to overcome a lot of those perceptions.
Absolutely. I should point out that it's 5 a.m., almost 5:30 in the morning in Japan, and you are so gracious to agree to be a part of Fox 11's News In Depth. I really appreciate it. And what would you like to say for your last moment here on In Depth?
Yeah, no, I just want to really offer my appreciation to this great nation and all the folks who have helped me along the way. We could not have been successful, at least without the opportunities that were presented to us. And I do pray for our nation to be able to heal. I do pray for our nation to be able to rapidly recover from COVID. And I do wish all of you health and happiness, and stay safe, everybody.
There is so much to the Asian American experience, especially here in Southern California. Let's take a small look at a story our Bob DeCastro did on Descanso Gardens.
Japanese flower growers, right before the war, they made up 50% of the LA flower market. And so they were really instrumental in transforming, bringing those varieties to Southern California.
We'll be back with more Fox 11 News In Depth, celebrating AAPI heritage, right after the break. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. Major General Luong, whom you just met, could certainly be an example of an Asian American success story, the kind of story that many Asian Americans and their parents aspire to. But that stereotype that Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders are serious, studious, and excel easily could be doing more harm than good, not only for Asians, but for other minorities as well. Joining us to talk about this is Farzana Nayani. She's an author, a speaker, and a diversity, equity, and inclusion specialist. And first of all, let's talk a little bit about what the model minority myth even means.
Exactly. The definition of the model minority myth is actually something that's been around for a very long time, over decades, and is based on generations of systemic racism against Asians and oppression. And the model minority myth itself is the conception that Asians are above and beyond in terms of education or professional career and don't need any help in any way and are that model in contrast with other groups. And it really creates a wedge and an accurate conception of Asians overall.
In fact, it was brought about in part to tell other minorities, look, if the Asian Americans can do it, why can't you?
Exactly. It's been completely contrived over years of conceptions of Asians in the news and in media as being, overly studious or good at math or the whiz kids like in Time magazine in the 1980s. And this has actually harmed us because, as we know, any stereotype is actually a bad stereotype because it's inaccurate and untrue. And there are bigger disparities in the Asian community if you look at different groups who are facing war or systemic oppression. And in addition to that economic disparity, as well as immigration issues, that it really is not a singular type of group that we can say that is a complete model minority overall.
Yeah, there was a Pew Research Center study fairly recently, about 2019, that suggested that the income equality gap between all Asian groups is actually widening, that Asian Americans may have the highest earning potential for those in the ethnicities, but they displace blacks in terms of the lowest earners. Can you address that?
Right. So there's actually a bigger gap within the Asian community. That economic disparity is wider. And of course, Asians have privileges in many ways, and there's colorism in the community that can benefit some of the Asian community, but that's not everyone. And in addition to that, there are people that are low income earners and have lower levels of education, despite the conception that the model minority myth holds.
So what should we be doing in order to dispel the model minority myth?
I really think we all need to be active bystanders. You know, when there are memes or funny jokes or stereotypes that are shown either through social media or the media in general, or even in passing as we hear them take place in the workplace or in the neighborhood or in the community, we have to interrupt them and really stand up and say, hey, you know, that's inaccurate. That's actually unrepresentative and tells a story that does more harm than good.
Is there anything that you can tell us that is surprising when you go into a company as their diversity specialist? What have you heard from people that make you go, really? You believe that?
Well, there's definitely this conception that Asians don't need help, and especially with the rise in anti-Asian racism, the uptick in that. That has been sometimes completely overlooked. People are in pain right now in terms of mental health and needing support. And over the past year, there's been over 3,800 incidents that have been reported of violent acts against Asians. And those are just the ones that are reported. So you can imagine that within the community and also within workplaces, that people are feeling the pain of that and the brunt of that and ongoing racism. And if we're seen as a model minority, there's less empathy, actually, around the community needing any help.
Now, Farzana, I am Yonsei. I'm fourth-generation Japanese-American, and you are?
My mother's from the Philippines, and my father's Pakistani by way of India, so I'm multi-ethnic Asian.
Right. And do we need to still be doing that in 2021?
Do we need to still define ourselves and claim our identity? We definitely do. And I think that part of the model minority myth, the reason why it continues to exist is because as we're seen in the workplaces, keeping our head down and you know, being good workers and not being seen as leaders, you know, people aren't being promoted and seen as people who can take executive roles. That's an issue. And then the systemic racism and oppression will continue as people don't see beyond that stereotype and that myth.
Yeah, as I mentioned, I'm fourth generation. I'm very impressed by the younger generation. They're speaking out a lot more now. What do you see?
There's definitely a lot of activism right now. And I think, the unfortunate positive byproduct of these tragic events is there is a lot of attention placed on the Asian and the Pacific Islander community in terms of resources and the ongoing nature of this as something that's systemic and not just a flash in the pan. So I do appreciate that this moment is more of a movement and a teachable time for us to wake up to what has been going on for generations.
And it's so difficult to sort of classify everybody because, you know, Asian American means anything from Japan to Korea to the Philippines and beyond. So we've all had such differing experiences.
Exactly. And at the same time, we all are under the banner of being labeled under this myth. And as we can see with the rise in Islamophobia and, you know, violence against the South Asian community, as well as the Filipino community and so on and so forth, it's not just East Asians that are victim to this. It's everyone within that diaspora that is in this country and globally that have experienced this.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would be surprised how long anti-Asian sentiment has been around, as in like when they first came to these shores many years ago. Farzana, thank you so much for joining us. I so appreciate you. All right, and we'll be right back with more in-depth after this. But first, take a look at a clip of this story Sandra Endo did about the Asian American experience.
Our white friend looked at us and she goes, how do you see out of those slits you call eyes? And in that moment, again, I was just like, this is the craziest question. Like, what do you mean?
Coming back after the break, some Asian American colleagues and I talk a bit about our own experiences. We'll be right back. We're back with Fox 11 News in depth. You might have noticed I've had a costume change. It's an honor just to be Asian, as Sandra Oh once said. And it is an honor to welcome two of my colleagues, Sandra Endo and Bob DeCastro. And you two, let's just start with the first question, which might be, how are you not like the model minority myth, Bob?
How am I not? Well, that's a big question, because I'm not like a model minority in many ways. I think people would know that. I mean, first of all, you know, what I do for a living, there's still a lack of Asian male figures within the broadcast industry. When I first even started, one of the reasons why I got into the television business was, as a youngster watching television, I thought there aren't that many Asian males out there, and I really kind of challenged myself, thought maybe I could be among the first hosts, among the first anchors. Despite them not being out there, I owe it to my parents, who always told me that my diversity, my being different, was an asset and a strength, despite sort of, you know, not talking about their own struggles and the racism that they must have experienced. My father being in the military and at that time being a Filipino and not being able to do certain jobs because of where he came from, and my mother being a physician and working in an industry where it was dominated, frankly, by mostly white males. But they insulated me from a lot of that. And as I fast forward 25 years later, I look around and still there really is sort of a lack of representation there. I mean, I would challenge anyone in to look in television, in movies, in pop culture, and really think about who are the leading Asian males out there. And you'd be hard-pressed to find that. And not just that, but maybe walking around your building and seeing in these executive positions where whether you see a representation of other Asian executives in your own organization.
Well, Sandra, what would you say? I know that I'm not good at math, and I know that's part of the stereotype and part of what the model minority myth is all about. What would you say?
Well, you know, I am a proud granddaughter of a man who was incarcerated during World War II right here on American soil just because he was Japanese. I am the proud daughter of two immigrants who came from Japan. So I was well aware of the struggle, the immigrant story, right? Working two times harder for half the recognition and the injustices that Asian Americans have felt. So I went into this career because I felt like we needed to have a voice, and I knew how much pain it caused so many Asian Americans to feel invisible in their own country, a country where they belong. So I was lucky enough to see models on TV. We had Connie Chung at the time. We had Trisha Toyota right here in the LA market. And so that was a pathway for being a journalist on TV. However, when I first started in my career, I was called Connie Chung, and not in the celebratory way. It was a punchline.
Boy, right? I can relate to that.
Yeah, absolutely. It was derogatory. So I've had to step out of my comfort zone for sure in terms of fighting to have a voice, to fight, to tell those stories, and obviously just be able to be tough and show that I was tough enough to handle everything thrown my way in this profession.
And Sandra, are you like me? I really had to fight against what the cultural norm was in my family and with my relatives, because you're not really in a place as a Japanese American who, you know, my father and mother were both incarcerated. You kind of feel like you're supposed to keep your head down and work hard, but not necessarily speak out. Did you have to fight against that?
Absolutely. I mean, my parents saw my struggle in this profession. It's not an easy path. And obviously, they said there are ways that you can have a happy life without having to go through that struggle. But for me, it was beyond that. It was for my generations past and for our future. So just the struggles of being felt like, you know, misogynistically, things that were said to you in the field or in this profession, and also the fact that people looked at us like, oh, you're quiet, you'll work hard, you won't fight back, and then wonder if you're tough enough to ask the hard questions. So things like that, it was a constant battle, and it still is today in some sense.
Yeah, and I almost feel like our parents, at least my parents, always tried so very hard to Americanize us in every way and to, you know, do everything that was almost to hide who we were and our heritage just so that we would assimilate in a different culture. It's something that they likely did in, you know, in their own professions, going through the Navy and going through a medical profession. So I hope that we can finally come to a time when we can really celebrate and embrace all of the diversity, because the diversity will make us stronger.
You know, and I have to tell you too, so I'm older than both of you, and I remember my mother saying, are you sure you want to go into that field? She was worried that I wasn't going to be able to take the pressure and the criticism that comes with being on TV. That first shot of me is at my very first station at Glenwood Springs, Colorado. It doesn't even exist anymore. But for sure, it was a difficult time period, because oftentimes I was the only Asian in the newsroom. I loved the fact that at times it was like, go cover the Chinese New Year parade, to the point where I said, you know, I'm not Chinese, right? I don't have any more insight on the Chinese New Year than anyone else in this newsroom. Did either one of you have that, where you kind of felt like you had to represent every Asian culture?
Oh, absolutely. Going to a story covering Harlem, let's say, in my first job in New York, you know, I've had every language yelled at me. Ni hao, you know, konnichiwa, every language, right? There's so many Asian languages. People don't understand that we are not a monolith. There are so many different diverse cultures and countries that all Asians come from. And to be just seen as just one type of Asian is just very difficult. And you don't want to be put in that hole. But I think now more than ever, there's more of an awareness. And that's something to celebrate absolutely this year, that people are seeing Asian Americans, and it's not a monolith, but that we are so diverse.
Yeah, seeing Asian Americans. Thanks, both of you, Sandra Endo and Bob DeCastro. And we have more for you from Fox 11 News In Depth coming up. But before that, you can enjoy a bit of this story about a traditional Japanese dance teacher still going strong at 103.
There's a lot of dances that I had to create. And that really helped me grow.
We'll be back with more Fox 11 News In Depth right after this break. That is it for this week's Fox 11 News In Depth. As we leave you, we'll share some more moments from the stories we've done during Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. Enjoy, and thanks for joining us.